Blog Talk Radio.
What up? Good morning, everybody. It is December the 3rd in the year 2020. We are 22 days away from Christmas, if that's the thing that you do with your family. I don't do Christmas. I don't. But it is a different feeling during this time of the year. I can't front on that. And I do enjoy that. I really do. You know, as we go through it, year in, year out, day in, day out, we're slogging, we're fighting, we're just trying to get and push through. It is a nice change of pace when it's seemingly the world settles in and folks get more kumbaya-ish. And I like it, man. I won't lie on it at all. I really enjoy it. I found myself yesterday evening whistling Christmas songs as I was in the mall. I took a little dip into the mall last night. Did a little self-care day, yes, a little selfish with my time. I just chilled, really. You know, I've been running. Haven't been feeling well all week. Just had not been feeling well all week. Don't know what's going on, just I don't know if it's a disturbance in the force, just the time of the year, whatever. I just wasn't my normal self. So I took a real self-care day yesterday. I just chilled, checked out the movie, did a little shopping, ate a decent meal. Didn't go too crazy. Ate a decent meal. Ran up in Costco. Renewed my membership with them like last week or whatever. So I ran up in there. I'm sorry for the I shouldn't be because I don't talk like that, but I just took it really easy and really sat back and enjoyed my day, which is something I don't normally do. Normally I'm running around, I'm working the phone. Worked the phones yesterday, did, because we were supposed to have an event, the Joe Man's Black Wall Street series on the 1st. Well, that didn't happen. We pushed it back to the 10th, which is next Saturday. And it's actually during the afternoon. Had it at one venue, had to change the venue. So working the phones was big time yesterday. Big time. But also had some personal stuff to do, you know what I'm saying? I have 2 credit cards with 1 company, and I was trying to pay off the balance of one and transfer it to the other, and they were like, well, we don't do that. I was like, okay, well, I'll use that money a different way. You know what I'm saying? If you're not going to do what I need you to do, then I don't need to do what you want me to do. So I'm cool. You know what I'm saying? I'll give you more than my minimum payment and keep that moving, but I'll take that money and I'll pay off another daggone credit card and just be done with that. The goal was to knock down one of the daggone credit cards. So it's still going to work. It's just going to work a different way. That's how that be. What's up, Rashi? How you doing, sis?
I am in trouble.
What's wrong?
I am on paid administrative leave.
What you do?
Well, do you want, well, you know, every story has 3 sides, right?
Yeah, your side, their side, and the truth.
Their side, your side, and the truth. On their side, I choked a little boy. On my side, I hugged the shit out of a little boy out of the classroom. On the state side, they're still trying to figure out.
Okay. So what caused you to hug?
Well, what happened was something that you would have to be an administrator to understand. I had hit a magic moment. A magic moment in a classroom happens when you get up to 90% participation in grade level information that is at or above grade level, and they're encouraging each other and engaged, you know, in the process. Mm-hmm. I achieved that with mathematics. It was an assignment called Each One, Teach One, where they all were responsible for math, and they were to stand up and teach each other, you know, one student teacher. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is respecting that student as a teacher, and we're rotating, right?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that's not even the problem. It started before that. It started when I asked a young scholar to stop talking in the hallway. See, I don't work at a school. I work at a college preparatory academy. And so it has rules that some schools don't. Some schools you can do a handstand in the hallway, you can run, skip, you can talk, you can walk indiscriminately, right? At my academy, you have to get in line because we march classes past each other, and we have everything from pre-K to the 8th grade. If you don't walk in line, you'll have older children cutting in front of a line above. It's just order. Order is a major part of how we get down at the school. And so I requested that a student of mine in line and turn his voice off. He refused. So I stood between him and the person that he was talking to, and that student pushed past me, you know what I'm saying, and knocked me out the way. That is not when they, you know, when things went, I just went ahead, and there's a male teacher that walked past me at that time, and I told him, you know, about the altercation, and he just took the little boy, okay? Mm-hmm. He held the little boy in his office with him for about an hour. Mm-hmm. When that child returned, we were in doing that thing I was telling you, that math related Each One, Teach One, and he was one, unwilling to do any of the math. I had to take his computer and stuff and make him pick his pencil up. He refused to actually do the math. And so he was my last outlier. I had got all but him and one other exceptional ed student to buy into the lesson.
Okay.
He got mad. He got angry about having to have to do that. And so every student who stood in front of him, he was calling them stupid. He was, any mistake they made, he laughed at them really loud. They were standing in front of the class. He's in front of the class. So he kept standing up, walking across that child while they were teaching. And he would get one tissue, wipe his upper lip, have a conversation with a student by that tissue holder, and then walk back. He did it 4 times.
Yeah.
Eventually, I got fed up. I told him it's time to go. Like I have to admit, I'm not a teacher. I'm a cognitive therapist. I know how to get information in people's brains, but I never really had behavior issues out of my children. I never really had behavior issues. My one son who was wayward, I doubled down on him, you know, keeping him challenged, so he never had a whole lot of time to make his own reality up. You understand? So
mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
will admit, Lee, I don't have the classroom management skills to deal with a actively trying not to learn.
Okay.
I only got it if I'm trying, but I can't. I'm here and I can, and I'm bored, and you need to up the rigor and challenge for me. I got all that, but I don't care. I don't like you. I'm not going to pick my pencil up. I'm not going to do this work. I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I asked that gentleman to leave. He said no. I got closer to him, and I asked him again to leave. He said no. Now, by now, I had already called 2 or 3 other adults to come and deal with this gentleman. They came. One came and took him. The other one just sat there, and while that adult was sitting there, he was miraculously able to pick up his pencil, be quiet, stay in his seat, not talk to him. He like totally changed his life while a man sat there next to him.
Oh, yeah.
That's
that
not
happened.
That man's job.
That energy,
that's
that
not that man's
different.
Job, though. Okay? That's not his job, though. In my opinion, he should have just took the little boy, but he, I guess, had something else to do. So he monitored his behavior for a while, told him, come on, quit acting crazy. And then he walked out. And I want you to venture to what that you think that boy did afterwards.
Oh, he started acting
right?
Of course he did.
He flipped the switch back on me, right? He flipped the switch to where the next child was unable to teach their math problem. He totally interrupted the process. Now, I'm telling you, I had children raising their hand begging me to be next to teach the class. You ain't heard of that, have you?
No. Not
I had children. I had children congratulating other children for how well they did explaining a problem. You ain't seen that on no TikTok video either, have you?
Nope.
I had found that sweet, glorious moment where I had children encouraging and teaching each other, and he just saw, okay, I hugged him. I put one hand around his shoulder and the other hand on his arm, and I very briskly walked him to the door. Into the arms of another instructor, you know, and closed the door on him and moved on. And when I got to work the next day, his mama had called DFS, Division of Family Child Protective Services. And so I'm like, listen, I'm here looking like, okay. Meanwhile, you know, the children are all in that class trying to figure out they finna get tested on coming up next year. They only got like 45 days. We got like 60 days before we start the testing cycles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If we don't come on and get these babies, we're going to have another year of loss, just another year. And this is a year of loss with them sitting in a chair.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here trying, and I'm listening to his mama. Like I, you know, describe it like she, for one, she wasn't there, but she's describing it to somebody like I lifted him out of his chair by his throat and threw him out of the classroom. And I'm telling you, I asked this brother, you know, how many times did a teacher have to ask you to stand up, Lee, and walk to the door. So I come up against this wall, the wall where it's going to take a, it takes a certain kind of behavior, to group behavior, to teach in a classroom. If you have even one, really, depending on the nature of their behavior, one child can stop all learning for every other student.
Right.
One child can halt any learning for every child. So when you realize, man, when you're not doing nothing and they acting up, it's cool, you can deal with discipline. But let me tell you what, when you got that sweet moment, and some child notice it and they see it and they throw, it bothered me. It bothered me so much that instead of sitting there waiting and calling the principal, calling the vice principal, calling everybody in the world, right, I simply just called myself over to him and asked him to go. And that right there got me sent home on administrative leave.
Well,
can
brother,
can I ask a couple questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he's on, so he's been in the classroom, so I wanted him to jump in. Go ahead, brother. Bear. Good morning.
Yeah, good boy. I've been there. Good morning to you both. I've been there.
Good morning,
I've been
brother
there. I don't think I was ever sent home. I do know I left the high school for similar issues, but it was more than I felt like the school created the environment. My only question to you is, are you okay? Because I know a lot of what we do. Yeah, are you okay?
I don't know if I'm okay, Brother Barry. Honestly, I got a little drunker than usual last night. I'm going to have to say that. I'm usually a two-shot girl. Best you get me is a half. But I went on ahead and took the whole half pint last night, and I didn't share it with anybody. So I can't say I'm okay, because when I'm okay, I don't drink a whole half pint of rum. What's bothering me mostly is that I don't even whip my own son, and he got a real smart mouth. Hey, what you doing right there? That's disrespectful. If you don't want me to escalate this, you're gonna have to stop doing what you're doing right there. And that kind of conversation with my son has been enough for the last 10 years at least, 10 years since I had to discipline had to touch a child for real. Touch a child. So my thing is, I know I'm not a default ass whooper. You know what I'm saying? I got not,
why you looking at me?
Have, okay. Okay. It is something I had to grow into, because it did used to be, hey, don't make me have to keep telling you again. I'm going to pop you. Okay. So
right.
Finally, after parents as teachers, after going to psych school, you know, being a psychologist, after working in it, okay, I found the other skills you can use in order. And my problem is I actually did it. I did those skills. I talked to the brother. I implored the help of others around me. I redirected the, you know what I'm saying? I did everything but call his people. And so my frustration is, Brother Barry, that people are honing in on me, hugging the shit out of that little boy, but nobody is not focused on the 6 hours of coping mechanisms I had to use up until I had to hug him out to class. That's the part that frustrates me. I called him, Brother Barry. I told them. They told me. They know that They know that dear child of God has oppositional issues. You know what I'm saying? They know this poor child of God has. And so I feel like they looked at me like I'm being treated as if I went off without any, you know, like I didn't try nothing else. Like I just punched him in the side of his head. But that is not at all, you know, the 6 hours, excuse me, sir, and hey, and can I get you back on all the teacher verbiage? You know them teacher, can I get you on task? I need you to I need you to tap back into this assignment. I need you to contribute, right, to your group. I need you to decrease, please. I need you to decrease your voice. Can I get you, please, to stop the sidebar conversations? These are all, I said this all day to this little boy. Eventually, I just said goodbye, and he said no. Okay. And I, no, what you mean? Like, what you mean no? What you mean? I have tried. Okay, you don't want to be in here because you're not doing the work. So go to where they don't care. The I don't know if what y'all call it, you know, in Maryland. I'm sure they got a dude or a lady now. Every school is supposed to have something called a restorative. We call them restorative justice officers. What do you know them as, Ms. Brother Barry? These are people who they like your in-school suspension dude. They're supposed to be the dude, the person you send a child to who you can't get to cooperate in the classroom, but they have, they're not a harm to themselves or others, because then you just call the regular security guy and get them up out of there. This is a child who's creating a not,
Yeah, we have that as well here.
You got something like that there?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Okay. Now, when I had already called him twice. He came and sat down and grabbed him for 5 minutes, and then he left. I felt like I was unsupported. The part, the support you're supposed to have for children who can't get on task, I didn't get none of that support. He came, you know, and he sat there. And let me tell you, he's a 6 foot tall, 3 foot wide black man. His voice is like Barry White. And he's completely bald. No, I don't have no smoke for him. Them kids don't want to even talk around him. Yes, he commands a quiet classroom. He's a 7 foot tall, 3 foot wide black man. I am a 5 foot tall, 5 foot wide black woman. I just don't. Shut up. I don't command that kind of respect from young black boys. And so I was like, what? When he left without him, I was like, why would you leave without the little boy? Why? Because don't nobody but this little boy's mama entertain his company. There's a file. It's tall. It's a tall file on this young gentleman where you can sit a preschooler on it and he can eat with the big kids. Okay? But none of that previous behavior comes into play in any particular incident. You understand what I'm saying? He could have set a fire on Monday, but that would not have bearing and me trying to get him to follow our directions on Wednesday. It has nothing to do with each other. So when I say, hey, man, this little boy, they don't hear that. They hear that situation where I had to get, you know, to where I felt I needed to eject this little boy out of there so that I could return to a, to what I was considering Shangri-La. It was a classroom full of fifth graders who were encouraging each other and doing mathematics willingly and teaching each other mathematics. You ain't heard of it. You ain't heard of it. So, no, I'm not a well, Barry. Now, here's the kicker, Barry. Are you ready? Because I'm not a teacher. I'm a cognitive therapist who has been put in a long-term substitute role, right? I have no union representation. If I don't go and give me a lawyer, there is no one in this district whose job it is to make sure that I don't get railroaded between this begrunted parent, this sociopathic child, and this an administration who is afraid, I guess. Is they afraid to be sued? I have no advocate. I have no advocate. I have no advocate, you know, emotionally. I have no advocate legally. The only thing that's saving me is little boy had on a coat. So it ain't like he could say, they can produce. No, it was in a classroom. So I can't, there's no footage I can show. It's illegal to videotape a classroom. All I have is the words of the children that were there, and the children that were there, I make all those children do homework. I make all those children up. You understand? I make all those children stop talking. I make all those children get in line. I make all those children tuck their shirts in. I make all those children spend no less than 4 minutes and 37 seconds in the bathroom. You understand?
Yeah.
I have no friend amongst those children willing to say, well, she did hug the shit out of them, but it was after she asked them to stand up and go to the door 4 times. They don't say that.
And no, okay? Not only that, it's not. It's too that she hugged him. She didn't choke him or yoke him or anything like that. She just
and they know what a choking is, because I'm sure because of the nature of where we live and how they act, they done all been choked out at least one time by somebody who love them. That's the nature of what fifth graders do. You can't make black children don't make it to the fifth grade without their parents choking them at least once.
So my question, Sister Rashi, the school that you work at, is it a public school or is it like a charter school?
It is a public school. However, we are a public school under a different program in that we are a signature school. We have a different level of academic rigor. We ask for more work. We are, like I said, it's college preparatory. So while it is a school, we do things that other schools don't have to do. And we insist on things at our school that other schools just don't do. We have projects. These children have projects due every month pertaining to an Africana theme, Kings and Queens of Africa, the Seminoles of the, you know, and the Gullah and the Maroons. This month is Kwanzaa, okay?
So yeah, I used to sit on the executive board for a school, and I used to write the curriculum for a school similar to that. It was called Sankofa Academy here. And so I'm familiar with the process. I've taught. I was a dean of students, as well as I sat on the executive board and also wrote curriculum for schools all the way from K all the way to high school. So
and
what
will
I'm
you
hearing
agree
is,
with Brother Barry that the discipline is high at these schools? Will you agree?
Oh yeah, especially in my classroom. My class literally wouldn't. No one would ever talk to you in the hallway. They wouldn't talk to staff. They wouldn't talk to
the hallway.
They wouldn't
is
talk
a
to
quiet
students.
Place, right, Brother Barry?
Quiet
the transition.
Place.
Once you get where you are, you can talk. If you're in the bathroom and you're done, you can talk. Mm-hmm. If it's the last 15 minutes of lunch in my school, you can talk. Before in the link program, that's the. For the children who have to come before school starts, you can talk. If you stay in class after school, you know, because your parents work late, you can. We put all that talking in there with the recess and the whole nine. But in that hallway when we transitioning, if you turn backwards talking to somebody, we can't transition smoothly if you are talking turn backwards, period. So the rules are clear, and I am not going to lie to y'all. Brother Barry, Brother Lee, when it comes to children, I keep it tight. I really do. I believe in children having their childhood. I don't like to ask children to assume adult roles before their time, and I give them a safe spectrum of behavior. This is what you need to be doing at this time. And I feel like all black mothers do, because it's the don't touch Don't be up in here loud. Don't ask these people for nothing to eat. Don't be in here. You understand, we give our kids rules. However, at our school, there are a couple of extras, right? You absolutely cannot tell adults no unless they asking you to do something that you that is illegal. You can't tell adults no at my school. If I tell you to sit down and be quiet, you just have to sit down and be quiet. You don't get to say, why? I wasn't doing nothing. I'm going to send you to the office. I'm just, that's just the nature of the school. We have asked you very calmly. We have already, when you walk in the room, we say, in this particular room, we're going to be learning blah, 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 and we need y'all to sit down and focus, open up your computers, log in and blah, 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 and be ready to it. You know, that's how I get down. I tell a child what we're going to do up to 20 minutes before we do it. I remind them on the transition on the way. I explain what my expectations are before they cross the threshold of the door. And they hate me for it. They hate it. But the point of the matter is you safe with me. Everybody know what they're supposed to be doing, and the behavior has been reined in tight, so you safe. You don't have to worry about somebody putting hand sanitizer and slapping you on the back of your neck with me. I was in the classroom alone. There were 23 students in that class, all of the fifth grade in one class. It's the fifth grade, so you know how 11-year-olds are. I don't know if you know any 11-year-olds in your life. Okay, but they're 10, 11, and there's two kids in there that got held back. They 12. So we got a 10, 11, 12 dynamic, right? In a room full of highly intelligent girls, more than I think it's like 10, it's 12 girls, all but two of them can read. At their grade level and higher, the other two, like I said, they being mainstreamed. Okay? When you mainstream a child who can't understand, they open up a certain behavior on you. When you try to make them learn, they get mad.
Mm-hmm.
When they get mad, they got two things they can do. They put their head down and they shut off, or they start paying attention to other stuff in the classroom that can entertain them. And I had a gentleman who entertained everybody.
Mm.
And I broke. I broke. I have to admit my parts. You know, when I tell people I can't stand nobody standing in front of me with a handful of, with five fingers pointed out at other people, and not one of them can come back to that person's, you know, understanding of what their part of this situation is. I hate people like that. And so whenever I get myself tied up into something, I try to point all them fingers back, right? I know I keep one pointed out always, but them other ones, I say, well, what you do, Johnson? What did you do, girl? And the first thing I did is I didn't get that little boy away from me. I know better. I know who I am around children who don't know how to act right. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I know my trigger are children who know what they're supposed to be doing and are intentionally not doing it. I know that's a trigger for me. I was supposed to get that little boy out of there immediately. I was supposed to call all the way up until the Board of Education, the superintendent of the district, if I had to, you understand, to get him out of there. But I just had so much pride over the fact that I had already called somebody over and over to get him out of there. I had already used that tactic, and it just didn't work for me, and I got frustrated.
Well, let me just chime in a couple more things, and this is not necessarily about you per se, but what I'm always amazed at when I hear these stories, and this is what I had to recognize when I was exiting education, the reason why I will never go back, is that these are not the parents of yesteryear. Meaning,
not at all.
It used to, it used to be a time where if you have that interaction with a black child and the parents had questions, soon as they found out that it was someone who looked like them, you know, it'd be a level of understanding and recognizing that, hey, well, I know my child. I know what kind of child I have. These parents don't feel like they have to know what kind of child they have anymore. Like, they don't, that's not what they're wired to say. Like, hey, this is my child.
That's because they stick an iPad or a smartphone in their hands all damn day, and the phone or the tablet spends more time with them than their children do. That's why.
Well, is that brotherly? And then the other side of it is that they're just as undisciplined as their child is. And so when you meet the child, you meet the parent. And people don't really get that. And so when you're dealing with a parent that have childish tendencies, because I'll give you a real brief. One of my last meetings was about a sixth grader who was reading at a third grade level, who was always disruptive in class, who couldn't read at all, right? And I was helping this girl read parts for a class. She wanted to be in a play, and it was a part that she had to read, and she couldn't read, and I went over her parts time and time again. But she was cutting up in class one day, and we had a discussion about it. And I told her, I said, this is why you struggle with your reading, is your behavior. If you change your behavior, you'll be able to read. She flipped over the desk. She did several other things before I stated all of that. However, when her mother showed up to the school, she didn't want to talk about the flipping over the desk. She didn't want to ask why was her daughter stuck in school suspension. The thing she wanted to bring up was me saying that her daughter struggled with reading because of her behavior. And she felt like that was setting her daughter back. And I'm like, lady, your daughter was set back before I met her. She can't read. And she's in sixth grade, and she's reading at the third grade level. It's unacceptable, right? You want to be mad. The time to be mad is at the reason why is your child reading at such a low level, right? And she wasn't angry about that. She honestly, that wasn't a bit of her concern. And I say that to y'all to say that's part of the collective struggle that we have. A lot of us just aren't in a position where we are recognizing that our children, A, are in these schools, in these classrooms cutting a fool. And B, when they are cutting a fool and they're cutting a fool with someone that comes from your culture and your background, that mother should be rest assured upon talking to Rashi, knowing that Rashi is a parent. That's a conversation for her and Rashi to have, to get to the thick of it way before you go to them people. But our people are not wired that way anymore.
Absolutely.
You should have seen that black woman standing in that hallway talking to the restorative justice officer like we had whipped that boy like an old slave or something, or we had did something, you know, to him. And this is my problem. The boy is not. He is highly intelligent. Now if you think the special kids get up to some tomfoolery, please understand them at grade level and above grade level kids, they can peel some shit off on you that will melt your hairline, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they know what the rules are. They know the rules.
Mm-hmm.
They know what they can say and do. Now, this same little boy, he told me, I want to call my mama. He wanted to call her from the classroom. I said, no, what we're going to do is you and I are going to go on our lunch break down to the vice principal, and we're going to call your mother from the administrative side. He said, never mind. Never mind then. But as soon as he got home, it was, yeah, you know. So I'm now it's illegal for me to find another job. I'm under investigation. So until the investigation deems me to have harmed him and no longer be able to be into the classroom, I still have to be available so that this can be resolved and me go back to work. How cold is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
How do you feel about that? How do you feel about going back to the classroom? You know, I think you
don't want to go back. I don't want to go back. Not to that setting. I don't want to go back to where I need to go to a school where people have paid to go there, so that when you tell a parent that the kid is fucking over their money, that you can they hear that. I paid $5,000 for Johnny to go to this school, and Johnny is sitting here refusing to write. I need you to make sure Johnny gets your money's worth, Mrs. Doe. Can you please deal with Johnny? I bet you they deal with Johnny because they have paid the money to get Johnny his education. When you don't pay and you don't have to go through any stringent process to get your child mm-hmm. in, you don't have anything invested, I'm guessing mm-hmm. from what I'm seeing, there's no investment into making the child actually do the work. However, at private school, there's an investment into Johnny's education.
Mm-hmm. So,
if I go back into a classroom setting, it'd be either a room where everybody's got a behavior problem. I'm either going to be at an alternative school where when I say, "Come on, little Johnny, it's time to go." When I call the resource officer, he bring him out. He already knows he's going to be on 10. He don't assume that there'll be a behavior correction later on, or that when he walk out of the room that child is thoroughly corrected, right?
Right.
They just pull him and take him. They already got a system in place, so they pull him, take him, and send him home or call a parent or whatever. There's something beyond me to deal with a child long term. That where they are an alternative school where they doing behavior modification, or a school where, hey, excuse me, ding ding, do I need to call somebody? Oh no, ma'am, Miss Johnson, please don't call anybody. Let me get myself on task. Because in public school, you got both. You got people who mama will slap their lips around like Daffy Duck if you call them. And I don't like that either,
mm-hmm.
For real. I don't like that either, Lee. I don't like knowing that there are children and that if I call their mama, they have to miss a day of school the next day. Because she beat and hit them in a way where the marks is there. And if they go to school, she could get hotline.
Yeah, or they need to heal from, not the marks, but because, you know, folks got smarter nowadays. But they still need to heal from the pain of that whipping up on that back dog. So yeah, I feel that. I definitely feel that.
Or this parent that you call and say, "Excuse me, ma'am, I had to get your son off the ceiling," and she want to know, "What was you doing when he was crawling up there?" I told him to come down, but I can't. But if I would have touched your son, he would have claimed that I snatched him down. And I would not, you know, prepare you. This, what I'm dealing with now.
Right. But, okay, so the other side of it, too, is what do you think about going full bore, getting whatever you need to get so that you can have that union representation? Do you think that's worth it?
Why wouldn't I have union representation? If I'm in the classroom, this is what's killing me. I came to substitute for somebody who is union certified. So if I'm substituting for a union for a position that is now being covered under a union certification, then why can I not have that representation for the position that I occupied in the time? When I'm subbing for the clerical staff, if they have their own thing, what if I make a mistake there, I should have the support and representation of whoever's over the clerical staff. Okay? Why is it to where I'm in the same position as the as another person, but I can't give advocacy. But we're both experiencing the same.
Because you didn't pay.
I didn't get the option
to
pay. They don't like giving. There is no union rep that comes to non-teachers. They after you
correct.
Get your certification, when you take your certificate, and they say yay, or when you graduate with your teaching degree from university, there's where you find your union rep saying, hey, we just heard, congratulations. We just heard, thank you for joining
the esteemed league. And sign this and give us your money. Right.
And for a small annual fee, you will be represented. There, when I graduated, when I came into the district, there was nobody there at orientation saying, hey, you're going to be in the classroom, right? Well, here, let's get you covered because no one should be in the classroom without coverage.
Mm-hmm.
No one should be in the classroom with these children without union coverage.
Okay, but again, it's like a militia versus the guard or the reserve. Militia is just a group of people that take up the charge to do the work because that was their choice. They chose to. You know, but they're not in the union because they're not full-fledged military members, so they don't get any VA benefits. That's not how that works. So you have decided to take up the charge and for a nice exchange, an exchange you yourself had not gotten in some time to your own account and your credit. But along with that, the sleight of hand is and was, but we ain't going to look after you if something goes wrong. Well, this is the time when that, but we ain't, is in full play. That's why I asked, is this the time that you look back and say, well, maybe it is best that I go do what I need to do, whatever that is, so that I can have that type of coverage and representation if a situation happens, not necessarily like this, but any situation happens in the future that you're covered and you're taken care of. Do you think it's worth it, or do you want to pivot and do something different with your time?
I think I want to pivot into a same industry, different work. Same industry, different work. I do believe in education. I believe in training young minds so that we can have something tomorrow. However, mm-hmm. the deterioration of society and the maturity of these children and how sophisticated they are at creating drama and trauma, I don't think I'm prepared to fight a child to learn and then have to turn and argue with their mother about it. I can tell you this right now. Anybody who ever said anything to my mama about me, she turned to me and said, and she'll be fixing it. And the next time you see her, you won't have this issue. And an extension cord later, I was tight. You know what I'm saying?
Did your mama used to cord you?
My mama extension corded me.
Oh, wow.
Well, let me say this. I think education is at a crossroads, and I don't want to necessarily blame the children. I want to put it on the people that put the controllers in place because there's a culture that's set up that these kids are just operating up under, and unfortunately the parents are part of that culture as well. Schools have just become glorified daycare centers. That's it. Make sure the parents have a place to drop the kids off so that they can go work for the corporations and the companies that need them. And so when you have teachers who are trying to teach and you have requirements, you have a curriculum that they want you to teach, they have all these classroom management skills they want you to use, they want you to do all of these things inside of the classroom. However, you are told that the classroom belongs to the kids. It don't belong to you. And the control is, they want the control really in the hands of the children as well. this is what they're teaching. You can't use words like consequences, right, for actions, right? So when kids don't learn that there's consequences for behaviors, some schools won't allow teachers to take away recess or make kids stay in for detention or make kids write, we used to have to write sentences for saying, speaking during lesson time and things of that nature. A lot of these schools are trying to do away with that because they have these models that they say work. Now, let me just tell you, took a couple of workshops, asked a couple questions, and I asked questions regarding students like the one that Sister Rashi was dealing with. And what I was told by the person that was selling this curriculum was, hey, if the kid is unruly, won't listen, this, hey, this redirective thing that we're talking about right here does not actually go for that kid. You're going to need to do something else. Well, the schools are not hearing that. The schools don't hear that. They only hear what they want to hear to buy that particular training so that they can make sure that they pass the state mandate problem. It's too much red tape in teaching. And not only is it red tape, it's worse when the parents don't have a standard for their child. The school could have a standard for your child, but what is your standard for your child? My standard for my children is if they're in a classroom and it's Sister Rashi, well, for one, Ms. Johnson, we're going to get a relationship going so I can understand that, hey, if he does or she does anything, you can call me and let me know or let my wife know, and we're going to deal with it, right? And we got your back. We're going to support you. Not only if there's something going on with my child, but if there's something going on with this school and you need me to come down there and have your back, I got your back. Lily White, Minnesota, we ain't got too many Sister Johnsons running around there, right? So when we get one, we got to keep her. Right? When it's Teacher Appreciation Day, oh, you're getting a good gift from the Berries, okay? Because we want you to stay in this spot because we know there's not a lot of you. Our people don't operate like that. Half these mothers coming in smelling like weed and weed glue.
Here the kids, okay? Ready for the last, are y'all ready for the last part? My boss is a member of the team prosecuting me. You didn't hear me. My boss is a part of the parent team that is prosecuting me.
Oh, wow.
Thomas, finish your point, because I think you were hitting on something, and I wanted you to finish that. So you said the parents walk in smelling like weed and what?
Weed and weed glue. And let me give you a prime example. And Rashi, I heard what you said about the your boss. This is what's crazy.
Your boss,
right. Position. Because that's the other side of it, too. That's the other part. But with the parents, what I've noticed in a lot of these situations, the schools appease the parents. They feel like the staff is a dime a dozen, and they don't feel that way about the parents. Now, here's the one thing that Rashi knows that I know that clearly don't get in the mind of the administrators. They sit up and talk to the staff all day long about test scores all day. Am I right, Rashi? All day long.
We do it right. Man, if you knew how they working us right now, we got them kids on three different databases turning in data, and we have to print it out, scan it into three different other databases for the district in order to get the statisticians to work their number. You hear me?
Oh, wow. Wow. Brother Barry, did we lose you?
Oh, no, I'm still here. I was listening to it. My point what I'm saying, Lee, is the parents are so fucking – excuse my language. They're so stupid. What they don't get is that you're just an ass in the seat. They really don't want to be bothered with your child neither. However, because that child is ass in the seat that they feel like is income, and Sister Rashi is what they consider out, they gotta pay for Rashi. Rashi's a bill to them. That child, they look at that child as a product that they're selling. They're making money off that kid, right? And if that kid is not performing at a higher stance, right, and that kid is in special ed or some type of anything like that, oh, that works. That kid got behavioral issues, whatever they can label your child in, because what they'll do is they'll have these issues with Rashi.
That's more
they'll
money,
they'll come
right?
back on the back end. Right.
That's more money, right?
The kid, all day long. All day long, and that's what they're running is ran as a business. That's no longer Terrell sitting in that seat. That's student 645, and we got a quota of 750. We need to be at maximum operation so we can get these dollars in, right? That's how they run it. That's how schools run. And so when I say this to parents, and then I look at the ones and I'm like, well, you don't get it because you've never been in a position to even understand how the income runs inside of your own home. All you know is the bills cost this. Let me make this money. You don't necessarily know what's an asset and what's a liability, right? That's what we don't teach our parents. So when it starts becoming black on black, because that mother should have came in, there's no way, Sister Rashi, you should be in a situation where two black parents can't have a conversation outside of the system. I don't care if you're in an all-black town or whatever.
Correct.
We should always be able to communicate about what happened. Because we may see each other inside of a grocery store. We may see each other inside of the mall. So we need to be able to communicate about what's going on with your child, right? Because parents used to call me on the weekend about their kids. So if I can get called on the weekend about your child, I used to tell people all the time, man, it's like I had 27 other baby moms. Because if them boys act up, I was getting called about the act up. They'd come to school telling me, oh, he did this on the weekend. Can you talk to him? I had all of that until it came time to say, hey, he's messing up, and there's going to be some consequences behind him messing up. Then it became, who is you? Well, I'm the guy that you've been telling about everything else that's been going on.
Okay. Now I know. See, they won't let you record it. But if I could show this woman, kind of some of this behavior, I don't have to because most children are not sophisticated enough to create a fake reality for every individual. Some of their character is going to bleed over to whoever they're talking to, right? So she's in the hallway, very adamant, and I'm standing on the other side watching, listening, and I'm told to move on because me standing, watching, and listening can then also be misconstrued as me being confrontational. It can be as me trying to, and I'm a substitute, so I'm not on her child's roster. She don't have to create a relationship with me if she don't want to. However, had she known what was going on with the dynamics of her son's class, she would know that I was in the classroom 2 to 3 out of 5 days as an assistant because it's one teacher with 20-something plus students. Okay? So she has to have somebody walk the room, look and say, hey, you didn't put you started a sentence with a lowercase letter. We don't do that here. And just kind of maintain the standard of achievement in the classroom or else is one elder lady with children walking up to her desk. No, I actually walked the room. So this is what I'm telling you. If you were there to know the standard, she would know that all of this is because I asked her son to achieve work, stop playing and achieve work. He said, no, I said, go. He said, no, I said, it just don't work like that. You don't get to tell me I'm not leaving after you done stood up and created an area. So, after all this, do I want to be a teacher? Yes. Do I want to teach in public school? I don't think so. I don't think I'm ready to deal with the spectrum of behavior that comes with, public school. However, I know I can teach. In fact, that is the problem, that I'm not sitting there queuing up YouTube videos, and I don't have them on some database where they just stare at the screen all day. These children were supposed to be doing high-order math, and they were teaching each other. Just like you said, Brother Barry, they want them to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
They want these children to assume responsibility for their own education. They want these children to be able to mentor and talk to each other in productive ways. That's what we were doing. And it offended that little boy so bad that he said, meow, meow, meow. Ooh, he's stupid. You got it wrong.
I'm saddened by the fact that you all couldn't have this conversation before it escalated to this level. I agree with Brother Barry totally. I think this should have been a conversation amongst yourselves first with her child Well, actually, no. Amongst yourselves first, then she have a conversation with her child, and then if she felt that she needed to take it in another direction, then by all means. But some folks are just out for the bag, no matter what. They're just out for and or attention. So it could be either way, especially in our day and time. It could be either way. She could just be out for the attention, and or she could be out for the attention and the bag, and or she could just be out for the bag.
Wait a minute, you think she's trying to, isn't it the possibility, Lee, that this woman is trying to sue the district and use me as a scapegoat for saying that I physically abused her son? You think it could get that far?
Absolutely.
Depends on her IQ.
Absolutely. Yeah, that and her ratchetness. Because, you know, some folks are just, again, she could just be wanting the damn attention. And if the attention comes with a bag, why not? Why not? You know what I'm saying? So, and you know how things like this happen. Things like this, it's not even a full-fledged suit. It's the threat of, there's a settlement, and everybody goes about their different their ways. Like, it's done. Because it's cheaper to pay them off and shut them up in the room.
But my
career, right.
Is
yeah.
It's done.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You are a byproduct of the tomfoolery. But that's how it goes. You know what I'm saying? Hopefully it doesn't come down to that. Hopefully you are definitely vindicated, because from the way you explained it, I don't think you did anything wrong. But like you started off with, there are three different sides to every story. Your side, their side, and the truth. So hopefully we'll get to that sooner rather than later, so you're not forever in a holding pattern. Because they suspended you without pay, correct?
Well, technically.
You said technically what?
Hey.
Can't hear you.
Until it's resolved.
Okay.
So you haven't paid until it's resolved?
Right.
So your money is on hold.
I'm not fired, and I'm not getting paid. But if a pay period rolls through, right, and this mm-hmm. is still pending, I will not get paid.
Oh, that shit sucks.
Yeah, that's...
And if this takes too long and I go give me a job, and then they say, okay, it's cool, and they find out that I went and got a job and I'm just been working and I don't, you know, then I can get sued for that, because that's technically me. It's a breach of contract. So even if I get a job, I have to get a night job, because that's the only job I can get that would have not made me in breach of my daytime work contract.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
Sorry to hear that, sister.
Okay. Yeah,
hey,
for real. That's
okay. Wild. And I said, teaching is a fantastic world. Why are people running from this? Why y'all running like this? How bad could it be?
Because of that? Because of shit like this?
Mm-hmm. I want mm-hmm. no parts, no time soon. When people be like, you should, like, no, I should not. No, I should not. Mm-hmm. I don't want no parts of it. It ran like a reality TV show.
Can I tell you something, though, Brother Barry? In that moment, that golden moment, when I had at least 13, 11-year-olds squirming in their seats with their hands
concert.
Up.
In concert. Trying to do their thing.
Next. If they could be next, Thomas, they wanted to be next up to the board to teach the next math problem. You hear me, Brother, mm-hmm. Brother Barry? They were squirming. They said, me, I want to teach the next one. It was like crack. I ain't never been that high.
And then came
the crash. It was magic. And he saw it. that dear child of God.
Well, see, okay. I'm sorry, I had to continue that laugh. I tried to cut it, but it didn't work. I was going to say the uniqueness about this conversation, right? Because obviously this was not a part of what we were supposed to talk about today. But the uniqueness of this conversation, and I was hoping Roddy was on by now, but he's still not. I hit him. We were talking yesterday, as we always do. And I said, Doc, we really need Doc on the show because I really want to talk to him about the behaviors of young men. Like, we have a lot of behavioral issues amongst our young people. And chief of them, in my opinion, is these young men have a lot of rocky, don't be offended if you are, it is what it is. They got a lot of female tendencies. And it's not a good look at all. There's no balance in society when women are behaving like women and men are behaving like women. How is it balanced? The scale is tipping in the wrong damn way, and that's just not how we as a society become successful or move towards success in any form or fashion. So, yeah, I definitely wanted to talk to him about that. So, you know, when you say this young man was extremely intelligent, he played the system like a fiddle. You didn't say that part. You said that he was extremely intelligent. I'm ad-libbing by he played the system like a fiddle. He knew what to do, when to do it, how to do it. He played his mother. You know, he's playing everybody right about him. But where do you get that from? You know what I'm saying? Men take responsibility for that. Yeah. We might bullshit for a little bit, like, I because, you know, we're going to lie to the wheels fall off. But when the wheels fall off, we're like, I get that. You know, that was me. You know, and we take our lumps and we keep it moving. So, when I hear stuff like this, and it builds to the fact that I already wanted somebody to come on to have this discussion, it leads me to believe that I was right. You know what I'm saying? And that's not to pat myself on the back. I'm just keeping it 100. Like, these are the conversations that we need to have, because as we move forward and try to build community and try to maintain and build family and or rebuild family, we have to understand one another. We have to understand where we are and where we should be, and hopefully that will help us get back to where we are, to where we should be and where we need to be, so that we can lay down some roots and make a basement and a foundation and blow up and really take off from there. Because without that understanding, without that foundation, without those roots, we're going to continue to fall, and we're going to continue to play ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and see, that's the thing about it, though. It's the playing yourself and then thinking you're getting over. And you don't learn that when you don't have that level of culture inside of your home. So one thing with education that most people can render, if you're working it long enough, that most IEPs are usually cultural inside of the home. You have some that are actual, you know, like just mental health things, but the majority of them that these children are oriented into it at home, ADHD. Why do you think they have a hard time paying attention? What's going on? Are they ever sitting still doing anything at one time at home? What focus goals or focus tasks do they have at home? Now, we all grew up in the washing the wall era, right? That was the longest Saturdays of your life, longest Saturdays, Sundays, or what have you, right? Right? Raking the leaves, putting the leaves in. These kids don't have a lot of those chores. And some of these things that we think our children should not be doing based off of, you know, because that's what the plantation want us to do. Now, some of these things are actually good because it builds not only character, but it builds responsibility and accountability, right? When you know you're responsible for things and you're accountable when those things are not done. When you take that away from children and then they watch parents who are also shirking their responsibilities and not also being accountable for the things that they're not completing, then that spills over into the classroom. that spills over into not only the student-teacher relationship, but the teacher-parent relationship. And so we just have to learn how to reculturalize our people and start getting better things in place. And, you know, when I say this so much because I feel like we have not done the adult work culturally as a total people, right? The adult work is there's some things across the board that we don't care about how you bring it. There's an operation strategy that we all must go by. We don't get each other fired at all. We don't play with each other's money. We all supposed to know that, period. So before anything went
right,
to those
if
folks,
it's not egregious, if you know that, right. that if they not like if they didn't do something to where you don't call on your coworker talking about he stole some copy paper and a statement. Man, get the hell on. You don't do that. You don't make it to where Thomas, can you say that again? If you really want to show solidarity as a culture, you don't engage in economic games where you gaslight and manipulate a fellow black person until they cannot keep their job and their livelihood. That's exactly it.
Right. That's and Lee, if we could understand that, brother, everything else politically, mm-hmm. economically would make sense. Like there's just things that we're not supposed to do.
Is you saying stop snitching? Because you know, I'll snitch at work, man. I don't look. You doing something that's gonna get us all fired? You getting snitched on now? Like you said, a couple pieces of paper. I ain't worried about that. You know what I'm saying? Look, here's the craziest thing. My grandfather says to all of us. Now remember, my parents were young when I was born, so I was like his last damn child. He goes, you know, look. Don't work for no man you can't steal from. Now that's some crazy shit.
And not me.
And when you think about it,
if you can't steal nothing from them, you bringing out a value to the business. Oh no,
say that one more time.
And
when you think about it,
supplies.
When you think about it, it's like, yo, that's crazy stuff. But it's like, yo, that makes a whole lot of damn sense because if he or she can't afford to miss a stapler, how can they afford to give you a raise? You know what I'm saying? So initially, it's like, how are you going to say something? Like, but then when you really sit back and factor that in, it's like, well, yeah. Now, ain't nobody talking about stealing from the damn till or, you know, stealing
they're
out
the
vault.
They're not
invaluable. Right. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? But, I mean, if you can't walk out the joint with a freaking ballpoint pen ever, you know, and I'm talking about awesome 100%. Oh, I just forgot about it. I had it in my pocket, forgot about it, and I walked out the store. You know, I walked home, and when I got home, I discovered I had it. And, you know, the next day you come back, and it's a freaking major investigation because there were 10 pens, and now they're 9. Like, well, who stole the pen? Like, yeah, come on, dog. I don't think I want to work here. Because if you count your pens like that, how that's going to work when it comes to my annual increase? Do I get an annual increase? Are you one of them jumpers that's like point? Right, are you one of them jumpers like 0.03% is good? Like,
my daughter works for a restaurant. My daughter worked for Eddie V's. I had fresh steaks. I had crab cakes. We had artisan desserts. Girl, you better steal that stuff. They not gonna pay you. You better get our stuff.
Don't put that girl in the
business.
Don't do that. Goodness. Yeah, gotta get our stuff. Right. You know what I'm saying? Good Lord, that makes sense. Yeah, so it really, you know, it was something. As a child, you look at me like, huh? But as I got older, I was like, let me tell you something. I probably could have supplied every kid in the school with damn pens when I was in the military. I cannot tell you how many times I picked up a daggone pen, slid it in my BDU pants, picked up another one, had it in my shirt, you know what I'm saying, and picked up one and had it in my hat.
Man, you wait,
and by the time
you
I got home, I had 4 days
on pen. You got to take more than a pen. Let's see, I done got a couple of laptops. I got
Lord
a humidifier. If they don't quit playing, I'm going to take that projector. When I go back in, I'm going to get the projector that nobody uses and unscrew it from the ceiling. Because don't nobody have done it, so I can go ahead on and use that. But I'm saying if you're going to get them, here's what we're saying. They are not.
Yeah, for real.
They
got
a plan. They plan is to not get give you what you worth. Very rare.
Oh, absolutely.
If you're one of them big wigs who get them annual gold and one of them stock market people who get the parachute at the end of the year. If you ain't one of them where you get headhunted, they didn't already figured out how not to get you your money. The work I do is worth $50 an hour, but they only pay me $25. You understand? But I teach from K through 8, all subjects. You understand? $5 an hour job. But I was so happy when they said $25, I heard $52. You understand? And I started treating it like it was $152. So they already know, though, that they are not, for one, they not representing me in the classroom. So they already know they cut in the corners. They don't do supplies. You buy your own supplies. No matter what job it is, they ask you to come up with some of your own. If it ain't nothing but an apron, they don't even wash them regularly enough. You have to come in with your own if you want to be able to work. So they know they cutting back. They know why. The stakeholders know why. Everybody knows why. So when you get your stuff, stop stealing pens unless you're going to take the boss's pen, that one that they gave him after he did 10 years. Get that one, the one that's got the wood block up under it, that's got his name engraved on it. Get that pen. Don't make them feel it because they don't feel that you pay almost 15% of your income in health care. They won't even find a policy for you that you can afford. They won't do it because that means they have to pay the other half. You only pay a portion of your medical policy. The company match you. Right, Brother Barry?
That's true.
No, the company pays the bulk of it. You pay a portion. But I feel what you're saying.
You pay a portion.
And you're right. We just had the renewal period. And I'm looking at my health care benefits, and I'm like, yo, do I really need this? As a disabled veteran, I really don't need health care benefits in my work. I really don't. But I prefer to keep them. Now, I will tell you, I usually go in a very cheap end because I don't need them to pay for much. You know what I'm saying? But I do like to keep them if I so choose to do some stuff outside of the VA. The VA is the god-awful worst damn system in the world for a young person that's working. It oh my gosh, man. Don't get me started on that bull crap. But anyhow,
you can make your company hundreds of millions of dollars, and they don't have to pay out nothing, but when you die on the job, when you kill over on that job and have a heart attack, they got to pay out where it's like $10,000, $20,000, $25,000. That's what they got you for. You know, that's what they match you with. Man, and I done made you $2.5 million every year, but you got me for my $25 million.
What did Michael Jackson say? All I really know is that they don't really care about us. So, you know. I need to pivot for a half a second. Brother Barry, do you think it's actually going to happen? Do you think that Deion is going to go and take the job at the University of Colorado?
I hope not. You know, my hope for Deion is that he stay at Jackson State and he leverage all of this attention towards Jackson State and what the program could become. And I think that's the most healthiest move because I feel like at the end of the day, he's already shattering thoughts about HBCUs, and he could actually, by him bringing black coaches from the pros down to other HBCUs and them actually, instead of doing what we do and being angry at Deion, I think a lot of them should probably copy what Prime is doing, get some of the other former coaches and colleagues who are not making it in the pros, bring them to an HBCU campus, and then start recruiting these kids and say, hey, you'll learn, you guys can learn how to, and then make HBCU the premier place to play. Because it's more money right. in the long term for that versus the money up front. Because $5 million to Deion Sanders, come on, man. That's Deion Sanders. We're not talking Nick Saban, right. who never played in the NFL. We're talking about Deion Sanders. Prime's still making money off his Nike endorsement deal, okay? So Prime gets money.
Aflac.
He doesn't. Aflac, right.
Right. He ain't losing. If he stays, the endorsement's gonna go off the roof. If he stays, the endorsement's gonna go off the roof.
Yeah, and the only thing that I think that could possibly push him out the door, and I heard someone mention this, and I was like, I never thought about it from that. You know, they gotta fix that water problem in Jackson. They gotta fix that water problem. Because those are archaic, like to be somewhere where the water is brown and you can't bathe or drink the water, like, man, who wants to live in those conditions or bring students to
that? Where's Rodney at? Where's Rodney Smith at when I need him? That was Coonsun Air Force Base, baby. The water was brown and it had a smell to it. And the first thing they told you when you in process was, water is safe to drink. That's the first words to your in-processing briefing. The first words to your in-processing briefing. The water is safe to drink. So I ran the water. Like, when I first got that, I ran the water because I love Kool-Aid. Always have, always will, probably. So I wanted to make some Kool-Aid because I got there in July. It was baking in Korea. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, what the hell is that smell? You know what I'm saying? Didn't pay attention to it. Took the Kool-Aid jug, threw it in the refrigerator, you know, so the water could chill. I bought a filter and everything, right? So I did that, opened the refrigerator a couple hours later. Like, oh, what the hell is that smell? Like, is it something? I thought I cleaned the refrigerator. You know what I'm saying? Man, I pulled the top off of that Kool-Aid pitcher. And I smelt it again. I was like, what the hell? Smelt the lid. Like, yo, it's the water. Oh, my God. Because when I turned it on, it had that brownish tint to it. So I was like, well, maybe it just needs to clear out. So I let it run for a little bit. You dig? So I let it run for a little bit. And then, like I said, I stuck it up under there, you know what I mean? Filled it up. I wasn't paying attention to it. Not going to lie. I was not paying attention to it. Filled it up, threw it in the refrigerator. Like, a couple hours, it'll be good. It'll be good to go. So, yeah, bro, I dig that. I dig that. So no one wants to think of their water looking, smelling, and or having a taste like that. But
is that why the Detroit Lions look so bad?
Look, they might be getting some of that flip water. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is – and that's not funny. It really isn't, you know. But it's one of those things that – we are really living with and living through. You know, we've had this conversation on the show quite a few times. Like, the country that is going to be the richest is whatever country builds or makes that technology to turn salt water into regular drinking water.
They can't get They can't get the people to do it because we already have dumped enough plastic and oil and other, you know, stuff in that water to where we are drastically desalination is the straw that'll break the marine biology's back. So it's not that they can't. They can. It's that they shouldn't. They shouldn't. It's not what we're going to have to do is start drinking our pee. I know, not straight out of the toilet, but we're just going to have to do. Yeah, we're not going to be able to tap into the ocean water. and hopefully they're not stupid enough to deplete any natural lakes that are occurring. But that sewage, we have to drink our sewage water. The process is not can we get the salt out. It's can we get the shit out, because we're going to have to drink that shitty water.
Well, coming from a freshwater summit inside of Milwaukee, a lot of places are drinking that shitty water. It's not just it's not just Flint, and it's a large portion of Michigan that have water issues. But even in Milwaukee, we had a person from Minnesota who came up from northern Minnesota. She brought some fresh water from a spring there. Now, if you never did a taste test between water, there is a clear difference between pure, fresh, clean water than other water. And the fresh water tastes like nothing, but it's refreshing. It smells like nothing, but it's refreshing. When you pour water into your cup, if you can smell something, it's not clean. If you can taste something, it's not clean. And this is a problem around the country. We've been drinking bottled water so much that has taste to it based off of the bottles that the water is stored in, and those bottles have agents in it that can give you cancer for a lot of the water that we do drink. We just haven't been talked to or taught enough about how we need to preserve our natural resources, because they want us to consume. And consumption or consumerism and capitalism is part of the problem. But, you know, Rashi, I do think, though, in certain situations, like looking at California and the wildfires, if they could figure out a way to take that water from the oceans and put out some of those fires and stream a system that can clean it out from salt.
It'll kill the soil. You can't put that salt in the soil like that. It'll kill the micro. It changes the pH, the microorganisms that build. It mess it up. It put out the fire, yes. But salt water is worse for a wildfire than the wildfire is, because eventually it burns itself out.
The University of Notre Dame, at least seeing this, the commercial, they actually have where they are creating a mechanism to actually take salt water and turn it into clean water. And so that's, I think, one of the places that they were looking at or trying it out to be was in California. And so when you take into consideration that the technology may be there, the only issue that you have is, okay, the technology is here, but what's going to stop the corporations from taking that technology, right,
and
weaponizing that against other people, right, or shelving it or weaponizing it against other people, right? So that's the problem that we have, is that we have a lot of problems. But I look at the Dion situation, back to him, that he broke ground, he broke fertile ground. It almost, you know, think about the football heroes that we grew up loving, like Lawrence Taylor and Walter Payton and Jerry Rice. They're all HBCU products, right? They are all HBCU products. And so to have historical black colleges, who, by the way, if we want to talk about schools being ran shitty, HBCUs are ran shitty, okay? Hopefully, if putting money back into it, bringing a different level of class into the school system, and I'm going to say this, and hopefully some of you listeners don't get upset, but getting these old Negro spiritual folks out of there. And I don't mean like Negro spiritual in a good way. I mean like in a fraud way, where they act like they're doing God's business, but they're, you know, manipulating the financial aid for the families. They're really washy. Gatekeeping in the wrong way. When you have schools like Alabama State, where the kids are saying that their financial aid checks are being held longer, right? They can't even afford some of the things because they're not even getting the student loan money on time. You have things like Grambling, at one point their whole football program has scabies based off of the laundry not being washed properly, based off of them not being able to have the funds. We hear all these things about homecomings and people being HBCU proud, but we don't see people putting money into the schools that they graduated from like they do to the vacations that they go to the white folks' home. And so we have to really, if we can get that football revenue, because there's revenue in football, if Deion can get 500 HBCUs to be that strong, they could at least bring an additional $400, $500 million in revenue. If they got basketball, if they, because here's the thing, Lee, we talk about
football. You think it's time for another conference?
No. Because here's the thing. If imagine if Jackson State had the equivalent of Deion as a basketball coach, and they could do what Penny Hardaway is doing at Memphis. You know Jackson State plays a D1 schedule, and you know they could get into the tournament of 64. If they go and pull a Fab Five, bro, that's it. It's a wrap.
What if Don Staley leaves South Carolina? Wow.
Think about
What if he recruits Don to leave South Carolina? Can you see that? And then get Cheryl Swoops or Cheryl Miller to come out of retirement to be an AD. Did you see that? Oh man, you talk about transformative right, athlete. Oh man,
it's possible, it's possible. And here's the other side of it too. While they're telling us about Colorado and University of Southern Florida throwing this money, I'm watching the black billionaires that talk about how much money they got. And I'm like, man, this would be the time for someone to say, hey, if they're offering Deion $5 million to go, hey, we're going to give you $5 million to stay. We'll put that we'll write that $5 million off per year. And the school has to put that on your salary. And we're going to make sure that you stay in Jackson, because bump all that. And what else do you need? Can we get the Jay-Z's, the Beyonce's to come down there and do fundraising concerts to keep this man in Jackson? Or can we get these other rappers to go do fundraising concerts at for these other schools? Where are these?
Y'all thinking about the people, but we have to start talking architecture. When you adapt a proper athletics program, that money don't it go on long term infrastructure at the facility, right?
They're already building a new field, and they opened a new locker room in Jackson already because of the revenue from the games. They can afford it. They Jackson State is killing it right now with respect to revenue. Their coffers probably more flush than it's ever been because of the game.
So
because of the attention, Deion is brought to that school.
Who can we do our best work with if we had to pick five? Which HCBU?
FAMU. Yep, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. North Carolina A&T, North Carolina Central, Jackson
two
State.
Two of them at North Carolina? You wouldn't just pick one?
Absolutely. Nope, absolutely. North Carolina A&T has a hell of a fan base. North Carolina Central, they be balling.
And Southern Louisiana too. They definitely have a good following too.
Nobody
in Georgia. No. Not Howard, no. Don't even you're
but,
not even
but, but
thinking
nobody,
about Link, the Lincoln, Lincolns. Neither one of the Lincolns.
It's a brother who is and I met him before. So I met him 3 years ago. It's a brother who's he's the president at a school. I keep forgetting the school in Kentucky, right? And he said something on MSNBC about 7 years ago. Because he refused to take salary. He's not taking salary for the school that he works for. Matter of fact, his church even gave the school back some of the land that they had that originally belonged to the HBCU, but somebody else bought it, and the church bought it from them and then gave it back to the school. That brother says, hey, the problem with us in this country is we call certain schools historical black colleges that are not historical black colleges. Howard is not an HBCU. And he said historical black colleges are the schools that we started, not the schools that white and Jewish funders started and then put a black face over it. They only did that to counter the schools that we were starting because they didn't want us focusing on agriculture and things of that nature. Okay? And so that's another history that we don't have, right? But, Rashi, sports is such a big thing into college that most of these collegiate schools, that's how they're staying afloat. They make so much money off of men's basketball and football that it's, I mean, football is $3 billion industry?
It's a month. Yes, sir. Yes,
basketball
sir.
Is
easy.
At least a billion dollar industry. I'm talking about college. And then here's the other side,
yep.
Rashi. Those two programs pay for the baseball, the
and
soccer,
else.
The tennis,
the
and everything else.
And everything else.
They put the school library, oh, that's sponsored by the basketball team. Oh, you want a Coliseum? Oh, man, the football team brings in the money for the Coliseum. And that's why at schools like the University of Texas, them billionaire boosters, they'll tell you who's going to be the coach and who ain't going to be the coach because they know this investment that we're making is only to make more money on the back end. So we have to take that same approach when it comes to us.
It's not a game, man.
I do agree on
and
that.
And we should be
at Because what happens is you graduate from your HBCU and you just then go try out for the football and then they pick you. Or you go to a school that already has this connection into the sport and the scout can see you there at your school and you can begin building your career, you know, pre-career stats that way. Is that how they're doing it?
Run it down one more time, Rashi. I'm sorry.
What I'm trying to get is, what is it about these young people, these young men coming to do sport? They're bringing the money, feels right? So if you don't go to a school that has a sports program like that, you just graduate and then you just try for the football team. You don't have, or do you play for another school? How do you break in if you don't go to a school that has a collegiate football program?
Well, most people don't do that. What? So, you know, yeah, you either go the long route to get to a school with a good program so you can get noticed, or you go the short route. So the short route is you're that good, someone recruits you at a Power Five school, you go to that school and you keep it pressing. The long route is you're good, but you're not that good, so you leave high school, you go to JUCO, you get better in JUCO, you start getting noticed in JUCO, and from JUCO, junior college, you take on a Power Five school normally, and that gets you into the league if you are really that talented. But remember, a brother on TikTok, at least I saw him on TikTok, broke it down. You know, you have basically 10,000 guys, 4,000 or whatever, applying for 176 jobs a year. So that's pretty much how many slots there are in the NFL every year. So that's a whole lot
and
of people.
And most of
that
those positions get filled by the previous, you know, not very many people retire.
No.
Even though somebody
retires
every year.
No. Because every team gets to draft every year. So that doesn't care about retirement. But, you know, people are going to get cut. Others are going to retire. Some folks, unfortunately, are going to get hurt. That's going to just force them out the game. So, you know, teams are allowed to get younger and younger every year if they so choose. And how many rounds are there to the NFL draft, Brother Barry? Is it six or seven?
Seven.
Because you get seven. Seven. So you get the first day, which
and there's a supplemental round too, also.
Right. Because you get the first day, which is all just the first round. Then you get the second day, which is the second and third round. No, second, third, and fourth. Then you get the third day, which is the fourth, fifth, sixth, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round in the third day. So you, and then later on, as Brother Barry was saying, you have the supplemental draft was like a couple weeks later or some crap like that. But anyhow, that's 32 teams. Let's just say you have a minimum of one pick per team. That's what, 32 times 7 is rough math, 224. So it's 224 slots, roughly 224 slots per year that are open in the NFL. I said a lower number because every team doesn't always get that many picks in the draft. Sometimes they spread them out, meaning I could have used my draft picks this year to go after a guy from last year. So where I supposedly had 7 picks this year, I may only have 4 because I put a trade package together to get some guy. You know, that happens more often than not. That's why it's not really 200 and something picks. It's more like 108. More like 180 something picks, whatever. You know, to end a year's time. So,
But pretty much, you have to get to it through school. So this is the power they're brokering. The power we're asking Deion Sanders and them to wield is power of getting people who are going to go straight to the NFL through this school this school. Mm-hmm. Over others.
Right,
this is
right,
what
right.
we're asking them. Listen, okay. I'm just making sure because it's not like Deion is not giving any money. He's bringing whatever fame and fortune he brokered from actually doing the job there. Because this is the beginning of him coaching, right? He went from being a player to a retiree to a coach. Is that correct?
So he went from being a player to a retiree, to an analyst. From an analyst, he started coaching locally in Dallas. So he started, you know, doing some things locally in Dallas. Then he started the Prime Academy, which has fallen to the wayside, whatever. But he started coaching locally first. So, no, he didn't take a national stance. He wasn't at a huge, prestigious high school or anything of that nature coaching. No, he was not. He was doing it more on his off time, if you will. And then it's something that I think he really fell in love with, and he's since chosen to pursue it full time.
How did he get to being at a prestigious university and having the kind of power where he could say, this is what we can do. This is what you can leave the field, work the magic of learning how to teach what you know to do physically, and then now we're saying take that and ask others, Swoops and some other people mm-hmm. to come
sure,
in and
right.
do the same thing. Right, their power and prestige from having done the job. And then whether they have actually coached or not, get that part handled somehow, whether locally or on part, however you do it, and then go to these historical black colleges and ask them if they can attempt to broker attention to their sports program by luring young talent that's interested in affiliating themselves with people who have made celebrity from themselves by doing the work. This is what we're saying?
Well, it's not just about celebrity,
go ahead, brother,
too. It's all about getting you prepped for the next level. So the thing is, school pros, like, so I'll give you a prime example. My son, his best friend, plays for the Tennessee Titans. He played at the University of Iowa. The University of Iowa runs a similar defense to the Tennessee Titans. The Tennessee Titans have been watching this young man since he's coming to school. They watched him since he came to Iowa. By his sophomore year, they were like, yo, he fits the size, he got the IQ, and he plays well in his style. Now they're planting the seeds that, hey, if this kid keeps going, next year by his junior year, we'll give him the indicator saying that, hey, if you come out, we'll draft you. And we can even tell you what round we'll draft you in. Based off of our relationship with the school, based off of the skills and techniques that you're being taught that fit our system, you're learning a pro system, which means you're going to be a pro defensive player. at the University of Iowa, that's pretty good because they usually produce some good safeties. They usually go high in the NFL draft, and they also have good they have good stock as far as sticking around. If you can create that at a Jackson State or at a FAMU or at a North Carolina A&T or what have you, then what happens is that opens up that pipeline, and then other kids attend the school because they want to follow that same path. That's why many black kids go to the University of Michigan, Ohio State, et cetera, is because they know they have a better chance to the pros. The other side of it too, Sister Rashi, is that ESPN, Fox Sports, NBC Sports, ABC Sports, et cetera, they put money into those schools to broadcast those games. HBCU have not brokered that kind of deal where they're getting paid that type of revenue. That revenue also impacts academics as well. And so those are the types of things that we've been missing at HBCUs. But black talent, black mind, have been going to these predominantly white schools, or PWIs as everybody else calls them, and that's what allowed them to stay afloat.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for
I think that will change with Deion. I think Deion's going to broker a hell of a contract for Jackson State. I see it coming. If he stays, this is going to be crazy because that dude is a hell of a businessman. And he's a hell of a showman. So you talked about them winning 2 years in a row, the regular season championship. Did they win the Chicago championship last year? Did they win the bowl game last year?
No, they lost. They lost in the championship.
Okay. All right. So they won the regular season play, but they lost the bowl. So
yes.
You're talking about them coming back this year, doing the same thing, potentially winning the bowl game. Man, you talking about fire. Fire, flame. The people that have come through this year to see them play, the marquee talent that's come through to give them support, blah, 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 blah. Man, I'm telling you, that is a marketing gold mine right now for that dude. It is a marketing gold mine for that dude. And if he is as smart as I think he is to capitalize on that situation, yeah, it's going to be a problem. That's all I can say for real, because it's going to be a problem. It really is going to be a problem. The money is going to start flowing like crazy. And I think he is wise enough to understand that it can't stop at Jackson. It really has to go around the horn to make the entirety of the conference stronger. So we'll see. We'll definitely see. It's a lovely point, though, to be at in life. You know, it's been so long since, you know, HBCUs have been elevated to this level, to, you know, where they're on ESPN, because I've seen a couple of games this year on ESPN. And look, right now they're on just ESPN2 and ESPNU. Hey, it is what it is. But eventually they'll be on ESPN. You know, when they're on the flagship, baby, that's money. That's real money. They getting that television revenue, and that's the money that's hitting them, those coffers that they ain't never seen before level. You know what I'm saying? And God knows. You know, again, if this dude stays this season, I see a contract coming through where everybody going to get that paper, because every Jackson State pro football game will be on television. Will be on television. So everybody going to be clamoring to schedule Jackson State this year to play them. Everybody. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I would love for Deion to be able to build that unit up to the point where they do finally take on a Power Five. Well, they did one this year, and they beat them, actually. But I'm talking about maybe another step up in the Power Five level and actually demolish the mofos. You know what I'm saying? And be like, yo, we truly have arrived. But, you know, that's going to take a couple more pieces in the recruiting classes and stuff like that, because, you know, let's be fair, a lot of kids are still running to your LSU's, your Alabama's, your Georgia's.
So we want black people to go to black schools so they can join the league and play.
Rashi, it's not just about them. It's not just about them joining the league. What we have to keep in mind is that the revenue that we're not being able to build our institutions about. The biggest issue that we have, and I was hoping we talked about reparations and what they're doing in California. I thought about it last time. My only pushback, I believe, was that they don't have no about institutions. Okay, yeah, so it's about institutions. We have to have institutions that stand on their own without white dollars. Part of the reason why we don't have a lot of what we need in this country is that we have to partner with white people for revenue because we don't have it ourselves. We don't have the mechanisms to make a product that they use without them. And when you do that, you are always at the mercy of other people when you have to be put in that position. You need that financial independence. Yes, they like the players. They like our talent. They want to see our talent. They even want to compete against our talent. But we should be benefiting from that as well as a people. Our institutions should be being built off of that, not them building institutions, right? Because look at Liberty College. Liberty College is founded by Jerry Falwell. It was just founded in 2003, right? But Liberty College has a D1 football program, a D1 basketball program. They got a law school. Steph Curry, brother Seth Curry, went to the school to play basketball there before he transferred to Duke. You know, you look at stuff like that and you say, dang, they just been around since 2000? And they got
No. 71. They were founded in 71.
Liberty's been around? Okay, well, my apologies.
71.
So,
it's okay.
Okay, so even 71, HBCUs have been around a lot longer. And so when you look at that and you say, man, how come we don't have that? We don't have it because, and this is going back to my brother Tommy Curry, we as black folk in this country, we have not been fully adultized in our citizenry. We're not the adult at the table. And we have to, the adults at the table, they not only provide, but they also maintain what it is that they provide. And we haven't figured out a way to do that collectively. So hopefully with Dion at the school and Hugh Jackson is at another school, Eddie George is at a school. There's a couple of NFL great coaches that are coaching. Hopefully they build that up and bring that pride back. And, by the way, how about they start putting up something collectively to the rest of us in these other parts of it, like in Minnesota. We don't have an HBCU, but I'm pretty sure, man, collectively as a state, you know, we could probably adopt the HBCU and send some of our kids as a pipeline to those schools. Same way we migrated to the north from the south, man, we should be able to migrate our children back to the south for schools in the same fashion.
Speaking of migration, I want you to hit on the reparations piece before we get out of here, because that was important to both of us for today.
Yeah, so Rashi, I don't know if you've seen this, but California is in the process of blazing the trail. I was so happy to see that, you know, $223,200 per person is what they're looking at. As far
per family,
as
per person,
to all descendants of slaves in California for housing discrimination at a cost of $559 billion, right? And I've watched their trials. I've seen how unapologetically, when people say they're unapologetically black, you got to watch those hearings to understand and see what unapologetically black means. Being able to tell people who call themselves allies and say, hey, you can't be a part of this. Why? Because there's limits there's places you're not willing to go. In order for this to work, we need to trample on those places. We want you to excuse yourself. For them to be able to say that and really get to this point, and by the way, shout out to Gavin Newsom. Times we hear Democrats talk about how they're allies. This is what allyship looks like. Knowing that there's a wrong there, knowing that there's something that needs to be made right. All he can do as a governor is say, hey, I'm going to sponsor this group to make sure you guys put this together, and then let this go through the House, let this go through the Senate, and let it do as it may. If it reaches me, I'm going to sign off on it. That's what allyship looks like. This other thing, well, I don't know, it's too big for me. I don't know what this is going to look like. Black people in California right now are migrating in the truckloads. We are leaving, especially Southern California. We're running out of Southern California. The cost of living is too high. We can't afford it. There's no upward mobility. These are the things that will keep us in place, being able to have, you know, you pay $232,000 or per person, and you got a household of five. Now, you almost had $1 million, right? You're almost at $1 million if you think about that. I honestly believe that if this happens, this would be great for our people. And by the way, politically, California always set trends for this country. It never follows the trend. Part of it
so
is
goes California, so goes the nation.
Exactly. And they're not enamored by the movie stars because they live there amongst them. As I told a brother earlier today, it's almost like living on the beach, and you're not going to be excited by saying you see it every day. So what do you guys think about
that? Lady Sanders' code word for other women. Yeah, I agree. Like that's a nice chunk of money. But I want to peep you on to something we may have missed. Providence, Rhode Island, a similar issue. Now they've established a $10 million bill to correct the wrongs of Black, Indigenous, and other people of color whose family have felt the effects of decades of discriminatory practices. Now, the budget was approved already in early November. They're just trying to figure out how to get it to people now because it's not about dollars. They're not actually putting cash in people's hands. What they want to do is establish a workforce training program that is set up to help at least 100 residents that look at investing in minority-owned businesses. There will be funds to help create Black-owned media. They can give us a call if they want because we'll always take some of their money. And African Heritage Cultural Organizations. Also, there will be funds set aside for home ownership programs. So though this does not fall totally in line with what California is looking to, because California is actually looking at putting a check in your hand, I'm not so opposed to Rhode Island's plan. I do, though, believe that it should be a combination of the two. And I say that because the only way that this country recognizes people is through the greenback. And without that, we'll still be marginalized, in my opinion. You know, those greenbacks help us write checks to people that are running for office that will have our best interests in office, write checks for schooling, better schooling, so on and so forth. So that's what I look at. Look, we're at the end of the program. We have a minute left. I want to thank you all for getting up with us this morning. Thank you, Rashi, for sharing. That was on time, for real. And I wish you nothing but the best as you fight the fight.
Well, I just want you brothers to pull together my retainer, you know. Just help me pull together my retainer. Because if she attempts to go ham, I have no defense. So just think about it, sister.
Okay. All right. Well, look. You, as we always say about this time, we love you. Anything you can do about it. Thank you, Brother Barry. You all be good. Till next week, we'll see you then. Peace.
All right, y'all. Peace.